York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, no guest. In fact, over the next 4 weeks, I'm going to try to minimize guests and instead put in an opportunity for you to call in on any topic that you find important in a talkback segment instead of the guest. I will have newsmaker guests, and I, of course, will have our Monday night guest program, on which is the most downloaded and popular program I do of the 15 hours a week, called the Progressive Commentary Hour, and, of course, continuing to do the Sunday night 8 to 9 p.m. show, all about health and nutrition, no guest. So I'm going to focus on responses and issues that are important to, from the audience. Now, here's what I will be sharing today. First, the latest on a very important anti-aging hormone. In fact, from the age of 27 on, we began to have less of this very important nutrient. It's called DHEA. And new information from Ivy Greenwell and Life Extension on what it does, why we should have it. I'll be talking about how our brains see men as people and women as body parts. This is new information, very important. I think for a lot of people, it'll help them better understand what has been going on for a long time and whether this is hardwired or whether this is conditional or both. From our environmental segment today, we now have absolute proof that the workers were asked by their company to fake the data at Fukushima, lessening the problem of contamination, meaning don't tell the truth about how much radiation was actually there, therefore downplaying its significance. Also, a big problem out there with global warming. And we've been saying this all along, but today there's even new information about how much ice is breaking up in the Arctic and on Greenland and what it means. Also, Bloomberg has just done a really good job, and I commend them for this, on doing an original investigative report by Jim F. DeSavio on Fracker's Fund University research that proves their case. And what he's done in this really good report is he shows that when you hear some good news about gas hydrofracking and you read an article on it, more often than not, that was supported financially by the fracking industry by funneling the money through different foundations and think tanks. But the end result is the public never knows. This was paid for propaganda. It's not real science, because the real independent science shows everything about hydrofracking is bad. I'll get to that. Our commentary today is from Rebecca Solnit and from Tom Dispatch, and it says, apologies to Mexico. I read this and I thought it was a brilliant, insightful commentary, and that reminds me of what I said, which I'll hold until my commentary, to a group of individuals up in Sedona when I was doing a lecture there last year, about the people who were smoking marijuana to chill out, to get in connection with their, you know, kind of blissful self. And I reminded them, are you taking any responsibility for the connection between that marijuana you're smoking and the narco-terrorism that's connected with it, including the deaths and decapitations in Mexico? They kind of brought the room at that moment to an upright position. Like, what'd you just say? And then I'll tell you about my response after that. Then from our issues today, two separate pieces that I'll share with you. Yesterday afternoon in Washington, D.C., we filmed the top lawyer, Steve Kahn, from the Whistleblowers Association. My film came out, those of you who've seen it, called War on Health. And then 2 weeks after it came out, the New York Times broke a story, cover, headlines, the FDA caught with 80,000 emails they had downloaded, but the story just began there. Now, it's no longer in the headlines, but I'll bring you up to date on how bad it is. Anyhow, we filmed him yesterday there. Tomorrow, running up to Canada to film there. Filmed Colin Campbell this week for genetic engineering. Went over to film a top scientist who works on animals about genetic engineering. I'm rushing as every single day to film on genetic engineering to help the people in California to win a vote of yes, we want food labeled if it's genetically engineered, because Monsanto and others are going to spend tens of millions of dollars to stop it. Because if we can get our food labeled that's genetically engineered, it will absolutely be the beginning of the end of the genetic engineering movement in the United States, if we can take that momentum to every state, and I believe we can. Anyhow, we need a really hard-hitting documentary, so I'm working on this nonstop. Fortunately, I started it 2 years ago, so we'll get it done in time. But now we have other whistleblowers coming forward. For example, today I'll talk about the three whistleblowers who are saying the following, quote, "They're spying on the entire country," meaning the USA. Who's saying they're spying on all of us, every single American, regularly, illegally? Three former National Security Agency employees, Thomas Drake, Kirk Wybie, and William Biney. And they should know they were a part of this, so I'm going to tell you that. Then I'm going to continue with my discussion I began some time ago about why and how we've become a police state. And yet you would never know this by listening to the official left or the official right media. So today, the rise of the police state in the absence of any mass opposition. Commentary from James Petras and Robin Eastman Abaye from Global Research. Also good news. Yesterday morning I was informed that Global Research listed and is showing in its entirety the war on health. In just minutes, 20,000 people went to view it. And that's remarkable, not because of how many people are watching it on their site, but because Global Research is the epicenter of all of the worldwide blogs getting information and articles on every topic. 2 years ago, when they took an article from myself and Richard Gale, it was posted on 159,000 different blogs, including USA Today, Times of India, all over the world. We guesstimate around 60 million people read it. So when they post it, it gets a big audience, and that's good. So now it's gone global, all over the world. So, and just immediately after that, 510,000 different views on Gary Noll TV. So it's into the mega, mega, mega millions of people on at this time. So we're happy about that because it's getting the message out. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. Once a year, I get a full-scale medical evaluation. Used to be every week, believe it or not, because I was testing myself with high doses of vitamin C. I would take 200,000 milligrams a day, 6 days a week, and then measure every part of my immune system to see was it good, bad, because I didn't want to offer something as a part of a therapeutic model until I first had tested myself. Now, to try to challenge my immune system, since I've never drank, I've never smoked, I've never taken a drug, I've never taken a recreational drug, don't eat bad food ever, then my immune system isn't a normal immune system. So in order to compensate and really, in effect, challenge it in a negative way, I raced. I raced in trains at times as much as 100, 120 miles a week in training. Just in 1 8-week period, I did 6 marathons in 8 weeks. And for 80 straight weeks, I was winning and setting world and national and state records everywhere, in every division, every distance. And then my whole immune system crashed. I mean, you couldn't see it in the blood work, but my chi was gone. And that's when I had to withdraw to my ranch at that time in Texas, and just to reflect and meditate alone with nature, take long walks down an old country road and just hang out with nature. And then my chi returned. And for a lot of you who wonder, why are you tired? Why don't you have the dynamic energy? Why aren't you connected with things? It's frequently because your chi's gone. And any time you overexert yourself, when you put more energy out than you're getting in, your chi will be diminished. In my case, it was a combination of counseling people every day, doing all my scientific research in the lab at night, training. I go sometimes right from the lab at night at 5 in the morning, stop off at the director's apartment, talk with him about what achieved overnight, and then go into Central Park, run 3 laps around Central Park, 18 miles, run home, take a shower, and start my day. And it just went from there. Well, there's a tipping point. But I couldn't find it in my blood chemistry that the adrenal glands were not exhausted. The hormone levels were balanced. There was no viruses, no bacteria, no candida, nothing that you would normally associate with loss of energy. But when you have a combination of ways of depleting yourself, then it drains. And my suggestion is the best antidote for that in the world, quiet, silent, reflective meditation with nature. That's important. Now, today, I don't do that because I know the benefit of the vitamin C drips for a lot of conditions. And additionally, every single day, I will take mindful moments. For example, this morning, over in Central Park, not just running around the park, but taking a moment to go through the park and just appreciate the trees and the little rain that we had this morning and just be present for it. It's exhilarating, and it also is energizing. If you live near a botanical garden, to do that. If you live near a museum, just to go in and sit in front of a beautiful piece of art, whatever you choose, and be energized by the art, because art gives off energy. I like Frederick Church and Thomas Cole and 18th century Hudson Valley artists. But each of us have our own idea of what is energizing to us. But the key is it's always alone. I do all this alone. And in silence, there's no cell phone. Just you and the energy. And then your energy comes back. Your chi comes back. Your vital life force comes back. And that's what gives you the energy to go through life. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people get so entangled in relationships that they never have a chance to rejuvenate their own chi. And so I suggest if you want to have a longer relationship and a healthier relationship, take time for yourself alone to energize. And it's just crucial. Now, that brings me to the subject of DHEA, because along the way, in the people I worked with, including young people, I found that when they were really hurt by their biochemistry from diet or viruses, their DHEA was frequently declined. And all the people over the age of 40, they had low DHEA. The whole aging process is what I've studied and done my clinical work on, and the people I've counseled. And it's directly connected to this hormone. You also have growth hormone, thyroid hormone, and DHEA. So an increase in hormones whose elevated levels are clearly harmful, such as insulin, cortisol, are bad. And when you're stressed, cortisol goes up, but insulin goes up. When you're eating because of anxiety or pain or anger or depression, your insulin level is going to increase. Why? Because your blood sugar is going up because you're eating unhealthy food. Nobody ever is so angry at someone they go out to have a wheatgrass juice. You bury your face in, you know, some chocolate cake. Well, that might be fine for the moment you're doing it, but then your body chemistry is assaulted. So increasing cortisol is every time you get stressed. It doesn't have to be acute stress. Please understand chronic low-level stress, what I call nuisance stress, where things are just bothersome, but nobody's going to say anything. You just live with it. Well, living with stress that is chronic raises cortisol. Cortisol kills you. Cortisol leads to cancer, it leads to dysinsulinism or metabolic syndrome, it leads to, and from there, diabetes, it leads to inflammation all over the body, including inflammation of your brain. So if you want to lose your memory quickly, have chronic stress. Now, most people today have no shortages of legitimate reasons to be stressed. The corruption of our entire body politic, the betrayal of our commons, for exploitation by those who are privatizing and exploiting it, the disintegration of many relationships, the lack of financial security, a whole generation of my peers, the baby boomers, who are now approaching or at retirement, but they can't because all their earlier dreams and expectations are out the window. Now they have a mother or father or someone who's got Alzheimer's or dementia or Parkinson's, and they have a responsibility, which they should. I believe that no matter what else is important in life, you never betray and you never turn your back on those who are closest to you. You have to be there in their hour of need, and especially without exception, our mothers and fathers. And even if they were abusive at some time in our life or we didn't like what they did, get over that. This is a new day. It's no longer about what they did to you. It's about you honoring your spiritual self. So anyhow, and then you think, well, hold on a second. I was supposed to be retiring. I was supposed to be going to someplace and living a better life. Or let's say it's not about the parents, it's about the kids. Suddenly you got a kid who's 24, 26, living back at home because there's no work. And you're not going to allow your kid to, you know, live on the street. And there are a lot of good kids. Nothing wrong with them. You don't blame them because there's no job. They weren't told the truth when they were in school and working as hard as they could to get the grades. All along, everyone encouraged them, get good grades, work hard, there'll be a job. And they got the good grades, worked hard, there's no job. 55%. But they've got the debt. But the parent had to sign on the... No college student signs for personal obligation. They have to have a co-signer. The co-signer is always the breadwinner, those who have the assets, so they can have that foreclosed on. That means the home. Well, hold on a second. Is that the same home that was gotten a second mortgage in order to pay for this unique education and for those other quality of life trips to Cancun and that $5,000 retreat to Deepak to meditate? Yeah, that's all part of it. Didn't anyone tell you that your house was not an ATM machine? No, they encouraged us to buy these houses. Yeah, and what they encouraged you to do, the moment there was equity, meaning the profit above what you owed, that was like profit to you and you could take it out, and you did, well, you just gave them all the equity in your house. Hence, you were left with money you disposed of, some of value, some of not, but now they own your house. Now you've got a kid living with you who's unemployed. You may be getting a cut back in benefits or health care. Now you can't afford for anybody to be sick, but you're all stressed to a level, maybe not acute stress, but chronic stress, that the stress hormones are causing disease. And you're not going to be covered if you have to go in for a routine check or to get a disease covered. You're frequently said, no, you're not covered. So there's no shortages of reason to be stressed. I'm trying to explain that we've got to deal with our cortisol and insulin levels because they can prove to be deadly. But even worse is when you have a reduction in your DHEA levels. That's going to speed up your aging process. And that will lead to the development of immunosenescence, atherosclerosis, osteoporosis, cognitive decline, depressed mood, and increased risk of cancer. So, when your DHEA level goes down, your cortisol level goes up. That's a really bad combination. And those with very little DHEA and higher levels of cortisol are more likely to suffer from memory loss and dementia and Alzheimer's. So the neuroprotective effects of DHEA replacement are crucial to staving off aging the brain. Now, why am I so concerned? A, because I just finished a major brand new film on this, which will be coming out in the fall, and a book to go with it, and I'm right up to date. In fact, even in the next 2 weeks, I have to film one final guy in Italy and one in England who have just come up with some new insights on how to de-age the brain, and I'm getting the latest on that. Otherwise, I've got everyone who's doing anything, at least that I know of, that's doing anything important represented in the two different things, so I'm telling you something that's very important. You've got to check your DHEA levels. It's inexpensive, it's easy to do. And then it's so easy to get its supplements because you can just buy it in any health food store. DHEA. And you just take one sublingual, or some would take it transdermal, and it helps prevent aging. It gives an improvement in your libido. It helps act like an antidepressant. It protects your heart. And it also improves the thickness in your skin, because a lot of people, as they get older, their skin gets thin. And then you start to see veins all over their face. Well, those veins were always there. It's just that your skin is thinning because you're not producing enough collagen. And you don't have enough of the right kind of fatty acids in the skin. DHEA helps that. So it is the help for andropause, which is also known as partial androgen deficiency in the aging male. And when men start losing their muscle mass, their skin starts to wrinkle, they get a fat belly, they get dry skin, they have less energy and loss of bone mass and mood disorders, then they need DHEA. And the same is also true for women. So that's our nutrient of the day to maintain healthy hormonal balance. Now, next up, this is from Science Daily, as published in the European Journal of Social Psychology. And here's what they say. See if this makes sense to you. It was done at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. It says, when casting our eyes upon an object, our brains either perceive it in its entirety or as a collection of parts. Consider, for instance, photo mosaics consisting of hundreds of tiny pictures that, when arranged a certain way, form a larger overall image. In fact, it takes two separate mental functions to see the mosaic from both perspectives. A new study suggests these two distinct cognitive processes are also in play with our basic physical perceptions of men and women, and importantly provides clues as to why women are often the targets of sexual objectification. The research, published in the European Journal of Social Psychology, found in a series of experiments that participants processing images of men and women in very different ways. When presented with images of men, perceivers tended to rely on a global cognitive processing, a method in the mind in which a person is perceived as a whole, meaning the whole being. Meanwhile, images of women were more often the subject of local cognitive processing, or the objectifying perception of something as an assemblage of its various parts. Now, the study is the first to link such cognitive processes to objectification theory, as according to Sarah Gervais, professor of psychology at the university. Quote, local processing underlies the way we think about objects, houses, cars, and so on. But global processing should prevent us from that when it comes to people. We don't break people down to their parts, except when it comes to women, which is really striking. Women are perceived in the same way that objects are. Now, a thought on that. How much of this is conditional? How many times, being raised in formative years, are we looking at the opposite sex based upon what we are conditioned to believe they represent to us? Do they represent security in a man, masculinity? And if so, why is it that certain men are always chosen over others for everything? The leader is not the little wimpy, shy, maybe compassionate and loving person, maybe the poetic one. Now, people may say, yeah, that's the one we like. We love those kind of wonderful, shy, you know, self-effacing, humble, giving men. Well, then why is it always chosen at the big, you know, macho guy, you know, who may or may not have any brains or understanding or sympathy at all? But it's also true in the body politic. The moment a politician shows a soft and vulnerable side, that's perceived as a negative. The moment they are angry. Remember when Dr. Dean literally imploded his presidential campaign when he was the front runner? Because he got angry. Instead of saying, we all get angry. Anger is a normal and healthy emotion. I get angry, but I take my anger into social injustice issues and I'll put it into a documentary, or a commentary, or I put it into my lectures. It becomes a useful tool. And therefore, what angered me becomes a way of, well, helping many people and save lives, like Death by Medicine, the book, the video, Prescription for Disaster, the documentary, Drugging of Our Children, the documentary, Knocking on the Devil's Door. I don't produce those things because I'm having a wonderful day, sitting in the park and looking at the rainbow. I'm looking at the reality of something looking back at me that I see for what it is, and I'm not willing to make an excuse for it because of any alignment with politics or religion or social class or race. I simply see something for what it is, and that's the art of being honest and authentic. Look at something for what it is, and then simply deal with it for the what, not the why. We get hung up in everything trying to make us feel good and why, instead of what is it? What did you just do? What did you say? Because I believe that we are what we do. Rarely what we say. Everybody can give you a good story. Very few people actually live it. So anyhow, so the moment in the body politic that you really show anger, you're a threat to people. Oh my God, did that person get angry? Well, I don't want them in power. Do you ever see the heads of corporations? Do you have any idea what kind of personality and chair throwing and screaming that goes through some of the top corporate leaders, including Bill Gates, who's notorious, and Steve Jobs, who had a terrible way of dealing with people? But you don't see that. You only see the part when they are surrounded by their PR people and controlling the media outlet they're in. Hence, we have politicians that only tell us something when they read off a monitor. You never see anyone sitting down without it being scripted and selecting people that you know they're going to throw you softball questions. What can we learn when you're scripted, you're reading off a monitor, you've had a dozen people write a speech for you to make you look empathetic, make you look like you understand what you're saying, make you look like you're attaching something important and personal to people that you're speaking with? What doesn't represent you at all? Then you turn right back around and make deals with multi-corporations and tyrannical people and dictatorships. Well, then which one are you? Are you the person that's going to make real change, or are you this person over here that's supplying more weapons to Saudi Arabia than any other country in our history? $60 billion. Why? To use against their own people. So there's no uprising in Saudi Arabia. Oh, well, that's clever. We can't even get to the point in our society where we can be honest with what we're dealing with because we refuse to look in a mirror and look authentically at the image coming back. We have to change it, alter it, apologize for it, make excuses, get into the why. Well, you know, if only. Now, they're not, and that's all nonsense. It's BS. So that's why I believe that we would be much healthier as human beings if we simply didn't allow any excuse to stand between us and living an authentic life, eating authentic food, thinking really good positive thoughts, and being honest about everything else. For example, this is from our environmental section today. Fukushima decontamination company made workers fake radiation readings. Quote, a leaked tape has confirmed that buildup, a Fukushima decontamination company responsible for aiding in the recovery of the Fukushima nuclear power plant, encouraged workers to falsely lower radiation readings by covering dosimeters with lead boxes. And this was broken in Japan in the Shimbun newspaper. What they did then, they told people to cover the boxes so they get very low readings. So then, when we were told it's not that bad, oh yeah, it was really bad. And hence people stayed within that area instead of being evacuated. So they've contaminated millions of people to having cancer and not living normal lives because they just couldn't be honest. Now from Bloomberg, there's this, and I'll just quote one page of it. Pennsylvania remains the largest U.S. state without a tax on natural gas production, thanks in part to a study released under the banner of Pennsylvania State University. The report predicated drillers, or no, excuse me, the report predicted drillers would shun Pennsylvania if new taxes were imposed, and lawmakers cited it the following year when they rejected a 5% tax proposed by then-Governor Ed Rendell. Quote, as an advocacy tool, it worked. That's according to Michael Wood, research director of the nonprofit Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center. if people wanted to find a reason to vote against having the industry taxed in that way, that gave them the reason to do so. What the study didn't do was note that it was sponsored by gas drillers and led by an economist now at the University of Wyoming with a history of producing industry-friendly research on economic and energy issues. The researcher, Tim Constantine, said his analysis was sound, and but others said it's completely biased because it's pro-industry. So then they have a caption here saying, buying prestige. Kerry Nelson, president of the American Association of University Professors, who made the tobacco analogy, said companies and their trade associations, quote, are buying the prestige of universities that are sometimes not transparent about the funding nor vigilant enough to prevent financial interests from shaping research studies. And then it goes on to give page after page after page about how articles and reports that say the gas hydrofracking is fine and no danger, these are all funded by the industry. So therefore, they're all biased. Now, one more thing, and then we'll go to our calls. And here, this is about an ongoing series of just making you aware that I believe, as do others, that we are in a police state. We are in a totalitarian transitional moment in our history. And every week or two, there's a new executive order or some new law that further restricts our rights, our constitutional rights, our liberties. And to talk about this, you're suddenly perceived as a nut. You do not hear any of what I'm talking about on MSNBC or the darlings of the left, even on this station. And that's unfortunate. Here is what Global Research, James Petras, and Robin Abaya had to say on this, and I'll quote from their Global Research paper. I'm not going to do all of it, just about two pages only. It's called The Rise of the Police State and the Absence of Any Mass Opposition. One of the most significant political developments in recent U.S. history has been the virtually unchallenged rise of the police state. Despite the vast expansion of the police powers of the executive branch of government, the extraordinary growth of an entire repressive agencies group with hundreds of thousands of personnel, enormous public and secret budgets, and the vast scope of police state surveillance, including the knowledge that we're monitoring currently over 40 million U.S. citizens' residents, there is virtually no mass pro-democracy movement. None has emerged to confront the powers and prerogatives or even to protest the investigations of the police state. In the early 50s, when the McCarthyite purges were accompanied by restrictions on free speech, compulsory loyalty oaths, and congressional witch hunt investigations of public officials and cultural figures and intellectuals and academics and trade unionists, such police state measures provoked widespread public debate and protest and even institutional resistance. By the end of the 1950s, mass demonstrations were held at the sites of the public hearings of the House Un-American Activities Committee in San Francisco in 1960, and elsewhere, major civil rights movements arose to challenge the racially segregated South, the compliant federal government, and the terrorist racist death squads of the KKK. The free speech movement in Berkeley in 1964 ignited nationwide mass demonstrations against the authoritarian-style university governance. The police state incubated during the first years of the Cold War and was challenged by mass movements pledged to retain or regain democratic freedoms and civil rights. Key to understanding the rise of mass movements for democratic freedoms was their fusion with broader social and cultural movements. Democratic freedoms were linked to the struggle for racial equality. Free speech was necessary in order to organize a mass movement against the imperial U.S. and Indo-Chinese wars and widespread racial segregation. The shutting down of congressional witch hunts and purges opened up the cultural sphere to new and critical voices and revitalized the trade unions and professional associations. All were seen as critical to protecting hard-won workers' rights and social advances. In the face of mass opposition, many of the overt police state tactics of the 1950s went underground and were replaced by covert operations. Selective state violence against individuals replaced mass purges. The popular pro-democracy movement strengthened civil society, and public hearings exposed and weakened the police state apparatus. but it did not go away. From the early 1980s to today, especially over the past 20 years, the police state has expanded dramatically, penetrating all aspects of civil society while arousing no sustained or even sporadic mass opposition. The question is, why has the police state grown and even exceeded the boundaries of previous periods of a repression, and yet now provoked no resistance of any sustained mass opposition? This is in contrast to the broad-based pro-democracy movements in the middle of the late 20th century. That a massive and growing police state apparatus exists is beyond doubt. One simply has to look at the published records of personnel, both public agencies and private contractors, the huge budgets and scores of agencies involved in internal spying on tens of millions of American citizens and residents. The scope and depth of arbitrary police state measures taken include arbitrary detention and interrogation, entrapment and the blacklisting of hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens. Presidential fiats and executive orders have established a framework for the assassination of U.S. citizens and residents, military tribunals, detention camps, and the seizure of private property. Yet, as these gross violations of the constitutional order have taken place, and as each police state agency has further eroded our democratic freedoms, there have been no massive anti-homeland security movements, no campus free speech movements. There are only the isolated and courageous voices of specialized civil liberties and constitutional freedom activists and organizations which speak out and raise legal challenges to the abuse, but have virtually no mass base and no objective coverage in the mass media. And then they consider this as part of concentric circles, and I thought this was really interesting. I hadn't heard this before, so I'll share this and then we'll go to your calls. While the potential reach of the police state agencies covers the entire U.S. population, in fact, it operates on the basis of concentric circles. The police state is perceived and experienced by the U.S. population according to the degree of their involvement in critical opposition to police policies or state policies. And while the police state theoretically affects everyone, in practice it operates through a series of concentric circles. The inner core of approximately several million of us is the sector of the population experiencing the brunt of police state persecution. They include the most critical active citizens, especially those identified by the police as sharing religious and ethnic identities with declared foreign enemies, critics or alleged people that we do not want to be associated with. These include immigrants and citizens of Arab, Persian, Pakistani, Afghani, and Somali descendants, as well as Americans converted to Islam. Ethnic and religious profiling is rife in all transport centers, airports, buses, train stations, on the highways. Mosques, Islamic charities, and foundations are under constant surveillance 24/7 and subject to raids, entrapment, arrests, and even Israeli-style targeted assassinations. The second core group targeted by the police include African Americans, Hispanics, and immigrants, rights activists that number into the many millions. They are subject to massive arbitrary sweeps, roundups, unlimited detention without trial, as well as mass indiscriminate deportations. After the core groups is the inner circle, which includes millions and millions of U.S. citizens, residents, who have written or spoken critically of U.S. and Israeli policy in the Middle East, expressed solidarity with the suffering of the Palestinian people, opposed U.S. invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, or have visited countries or regions opposed to U.S. empire building like Venezuela, Iran, South Lebanon, Syria, the West Bank, or Gaza. Hundreds of thousands of these citizens have their telephones, emails, internet communications under 24/7 surveillance. They've been targeted in airports, denied passports, subject to visa visits, and also overt blacklisting. Activists engaged in civil liberties groups, lawyers and professionals, leftists engaged in anti-imperialist and pro-democracy and anti-police state activities in their publications are massively policed. Everything they do and say is monitored. The outer circle, including community, civic, religious, and trade union leaders and activists in the course of their active interactivity that offer any support for core and inner circle critics and victims of police state violations are also then profiled. So that means that just about everyone in this audience would be on a profile list. Now, this is a follow-up. This is brand new. You haven't heard this. I'll quote this in Common Dreams. The National Security Agency has created a, quote, pernicious, persistent, and permanent database since 9/11 and is spying on, quote, the entire country of the United States, according to Thomas Drake, Kirk Wybie, and William Binney. Drake said the widespread domestic spying was due to, quote, key decisions made shortly after 9/11, which began to rapidly turn the United States of America into the equivalent of a foreign nation for dragnet blanket electronic surveillance. And it goes on then to talk about how they're monitoring everything, every day, all the time, without due process. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health, nutrition, the environment, and social issues. Your time to talk back now. This is normally when we'll be going to our guests for the last 15 to 20 minutes of our program. And you can call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And also the good news is that we are, I've been given two figures. One is that we're approaching 80,000 people listening over the telephone. Just recently, we logged over 1 million minutes of listening. That means that to the cab driver who picked me up the other day, didn't know that he was a listener. When I went to get out of the cab, he said, "I can't take your money." It was about $6. And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Oh, I listened to you. I've gotten too much information." So I gave him $10. And I said, "Look, tell the next person who gets in the cab that you believe would appreciate a gift. Say, this is a gift from a stranger in New York, to show you that not all the people in New York are without a heart and care about each other. Pass the gift along. Maybe they'll appreciate it, maybe not." And he said, "Fine." I do that all the time. I believe everyone should do that. I believe that giving the gifts of life and gifts of our insight and knowledge are part of our moral responsibility to each other. In any case, he talked about, and he was a Sufi, and he was from India, and he talked about why listen, what he gained. But we have a lot of cab drivers listening right now, so a big shout out to the cab drivers. We appreciate you listening. Anyhow, they're listening over the telephone now, not just the radio. And truck drivers, you can go anywhere in America, anywhere in Canada, at any time, listen live or download from the archives, call 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. This is just an additional quality service that we're providing. No money I make, not a penny. I just know how many people are stuck to the radio or can't listen because of where they're traveling. Now you can. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go to your calls for the rest of the program, and we're going to be doing this every day, unless we have Newsmaker. I just have a few program announcements. First, I have a lot of clothes that I brought over my final of the season. So they're all men's clothing, and if you would, and they're free. One item to person. If you can benefit from it, you can come to our office at 83rd and Broadway, 2307 Broadway, and try on shoes, pants, shirts. They're all there. Because I get a new wardrobe, I wait till the last discount day of summer when everyone's got 80% discount. Then I go out and I go to the places that I like their clothes because of their uniqueness, their style, and their draping quality. And because I do a lot of lecturing, and I always like to look nice for the audience. I don't believe in schlepping it up there. Anyhow, I'm giving that all away. I do it every year. So you can go out and drive by. Also, I just got today all the photographs of the homesteading project. Plus, took some additional photographs of some new plantings I've done, because that's my hobby. That's how I relax. I like to be alone and just spend my day. Well, I'm not alone. There's always birds, and there's little goats, and there's other little creatures. But I put all these up on my website. If you'd like to take a look at them, you'll see things that are growing. and the homesteaders and some of these homeless people did all this. And then I give the food to local charities. They come and get it to feed the local church people who are a little financially challenged this time. So everything gets recycled in a positive way. And how can you watch these? You go to GaryNoll.com, click on the photos video button, and then click more photos. And that will give you the views of the Paradise Gardens grounds and the Homestead Project and all. Really, I think you'll appreciate it. Now, this Saturday at around noon, because I got to do some filming earlier, I'm going to be doing a discussion for those would-be documentarians who would like to do documentaries, want to do some work on documentaries, and I'll be helping. I promise I'd give people some pointers and tips on how to do a documentary. So I'm going to set aside an hour on Saturday from noon to 1. If you want to come, you can call our office at 646-926-5422. There's no charge. It's just to help people. I'm also going to be hiring for 3 weeks a master chef and a photographer. My new recipe book is done, but I'm going to reshoot about 70 photos because there was a glitch, and they're just following what I've already done. The rest of them came out all right. Big book coming out in the fall. You can call that number. That's a paying position in it for the little project, and that's 646-926-5422. Let's go over and say hello to Victor. Hi, Victor from Queens.
Hi, Gary. I had a quick question for you. I've read online that fluoride, one of the things it does is it calcifies the pineal gland. And the stated remedy for that was to take very tiny amounts of borax to you got to kind of chelate that or to get that off your gland.
I'm totally opposed to fluoride. Fluoride is not an essential nutrient, even though you find it in many vitamins, including children's vitamins, and in toothpaste. And in mouthwash, I've written a very definitive report on this. If you go to my website and you look under fluoride, you'll see an article entitled The Fluoride Fiasco, and I upgrade that about every 2 months. That gives you the most scientifically objective challenge to everything fluoride. And if you do have an overdose of fluoride, then chelation therapy is the remedy. All right, all the best to you. And let's say hello to Christina from White Plains. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Great.
Listen, I just want to thank you for having so much courage, and I've been listening to you for years. My mother listened to you when I was a kid, and I listen to you now, and my kids listen to you, and we just think you're great. So first, thank you for everything you do for the public.
Appreciate it.
The question I have is how to enrich your adrenal glands. I know today you were talking about DHEA, and I have the opposite problem. I have too little cortisol, and it's been tested and things like that, and I thought that maybe you could go over some herbs or vitamins that would help the adrenal glands. I take pantothenic acid and vitamin C and a few herbs, but I thought maybe you could help me with some other things to help them.
It's not difficult at all. The most important single nutrient in the adrenal cortex is vitamin C. But that means taking vitamin C about every 2 hours and taking it with its co-catalyst, quercetin, generally in half the amount, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 500 milligrams quercetin. But also taking ginseng, Eleutherococcus sinicosus ginseng, or Siberian ginseng, or if you're able to get it, red root ginseng. Now, that also acts as an adaptogen and will help bring up the energy of the adrenal glands. Those are the two I would recommend. Now, you could also take some NADH, 20 milligrams 3 times a day, and coenzyme Q10, 100 milligrams 5 times a day. Take them together. That also increases the important combustion capacity of the mitochondria in the adrenal glands. And adenosine triphosphate is at a greater level when you have those two nutrients present. So that's what I would recommend. All the best. And let's say hello to Flory from Miami. Hi, Flory.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
First of all, I want to say thank you for what you do. I also love your posts on Facebook. They are great, amazing. I also appreciate your knowledge on Israel and Venezuela, two countries that I spend most of my life in. And what I want to say is that it's refreshing to hear about the anger being a healthy emotion, because when I used to be part of the 12-step fellowship rooms, I was given the message that that emotion would lead me to relapse, and how powerful the messages were that every time I had anger, I relapsed. And today I no longer go to those fellowships, of course. I have a different approach. And I thank you for everything and for all that you do.
Here's the question. Now, since using this information and detoxing, have you gone back to your 12-step meetings?
No.
Have you gone back to any of the attitudes or behavior or actions that you were in your more addictive mind style stage?
No.
Do you feel happy and healthy today?
The best.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Great piece today, those commentaries. I have an email here from Richard from Santa Fe, and it's a rather long email. I'm going to kind of encapsulate it. He said, I did a lot of things for the wrong reasons. He says, I bought homes in Los Angeles, Santa Fe, and the taxes kept going up and up, and the values are going down. He says these days conversations are very negative about the housing market. He's very frustrated, and he said he's in the upper middle class economy. He says, I have all this real estate that at one time was worth $2.5 million. He says, I also took mortgages on both homes. Now I'm underwater. And he says, the money coming in for my services are diminishing. I have kids in college. I'm disgusted with my life. And he said, by the way, I never thought about being enslaved by the central banks of the world. He says a UCLA professor said that you were right. The central bank and their partners control the future. His question for you essentially is, how do we get here? How can we get out of it? And for me, what can I do?
First thing that he should do is stop trying to change the story. Every day we rewrite our stories based upon how we feel and the circumstances we're in. Just look at the idea that he doesn't have to redeem his life or the choices he's made by staying in a situation that has expired. He's like the person that goes to the refrigerator, opens up a carton of milk that's 3 months old, smells it, it's curdled, and thinks, well, should I drink it? The answer is no, you shouldn't. So staying in a home, irrespective of what the memories of that home was, the good memories will remain, but now it's going to be all bad memories because you feel a prisoner to that little piece of real estate, that brick and mortar. So get out of it. Walk away from it. In other words, if you're underwater, the real estate market's not coming back because we have about 10 million empty homes in the United States that are intentionally being warehoused by banks because they want to keep it looking like the real estate market is going to come back. It won't, not in your lifetime, and not the way it was. So get out of that completely. If you can declare bankruptcy, I would. And there's no shame in bankruptcy. I advocate it for people because they can start over. He is correct about the central bank. In the United States, the single most corrupt organization is the Federal Reserve. It's not a government agency. It's private. It's owned by the their own private for-profit central banks, which are in turn the largest stock owners are the large banking families, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and other banking consortiums. So they control the boards, since they control the policies. So they have enormous leverage. Now, they've had three quantitative easings through the Federal Reserve. None have helped anybody except the banks. If they really want to change America around, A, you put a moratorium on all home foreclosures. B, you stop all debt on servicing charges on all credit cards. So you go to zero and let people pay off the principal and not the interest. So could you imagine the relief that would give if you knew that you could get out of a debt with bankruptcy, which you cannot now on student loans? But if you don't have any work, and if you've been unemployed and you've got a $200,000 debt, you should have the legal right, as anyone else does, to file bankruptcy. Secondly, we should stop all interest payments on credit cards, stop as of now, forgive all late ones, so that they make their money Remember, banks make their biggest money when you miss a payment. They want you to miss a payment because then they can take you out of your 19 or 29% interest bracket and take you up to 100%. And with a debit card, 1,000%, 1,500%. It's insane how much they can get away with. And then we should close down the Federal Reserve completely. Now, here's what people do not understand, and Richard Clark, I think, made a very, very wise decision when he told us that, and we forget this, that if the federal government was able just to go ahead and print money itself, then you could print money as you needed it and have no interest on it. And therefore, the government could say, okay, we need to fix our bridges and our educational system, and we have to de-ghettoize America, so we're going to put some money into each of these communities without interest. And the money will not go to major contractors, but go into the community. Then we would have almost no debt, because you wouldn't have any interest, and it would be properly used. Instead of doing that, we give $16 trillion to 22,000 transactions, mainly major corporations, and we get nothing in return for it. So here's what it means when we don't want the federal government any longer working in cooperation with the Federal Reserve to be the enslavers of us. Ask yourself this, Luann, where does money come from? All right. In the United States, it comes from the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, it creates that by the stroke of a computer tap. It's out of pure alchemy. There is nothing whatsoever in the world, nothing backing up the dollars that prints. It's a fiat currency. And what generally, when the U.S. government needs to spend another $1 billion on the war this week, it will simply print up a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds, and those bonds then are taken over to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve then buys them and then sells them. And to pay for these bonds that it buys from the Treasury Department, the privately owned Federal Reserve creates $1 billion on its computers out of thin air from nothing and electronically credits the account of the government, specifically U.S. Treasury Department, thereby exchanging this newly created form of nothing, $20 billion, $100 billion, $500 billion worth of U.S. Treasury bonds that is just printed up. Okay, it's a Ponzi scheme. It's a fraud. So I say get rid of the Federal Reserve. Don't put any more money into major corporations. Stop all subsidies to all major, the pharmaceutical industry, the energy industries, cartels, the big agri, the healthcare industry. Have a central single payer that we all can participate in, which other countries do, and that would immediately save the United States if we just did those $3 trillion a year, and then give. $250 billion at $50,000 per job, and you've just created 5 million jobs. Give $500 billion, and you've created 10 million jobs at $50,000 a living wage. Give $750 billion, which is still under how much was given with the first completely wasted for the United States taxpayer. Give that as your first bailout, but give it to people as a way of working within industries, supporting those private small businesses, and you've just employed 15 million Americans. You've just eliminated unemployment, and you're still under what the first one of our bailouts was with no benefit to the American public. Then have a 5% transaction tax on every single stroke of a microsecond computer stock movement, which is 70% of all the stock trades, and you bring in another $1 trillion. Then give a one-time tax of 10% to the $26 trillion, $26 trillion parked outside of the United States, and you bring in another $2.6 trillion. Then you take away the private insurance industry's capacity to charge 33 cents out of every dollar, which is approximately $800 billion a year, and you give that to a central nonprofit foundation instead. So that everyone who needs health care can get it, and you can't tack on the cost of your administration and profits and big payroll to the public, so therefore the public can get very high-quality health insurance and without having anyone to deny them coverage. So all that together changes almost $5 trillion a year, yet no one's willing to look at that as what we could do. We're out of time. Thank you for your calls. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.